Jack Chambers is the new Minister for Finance. This comes as Michael McGrath has been given the Irish government's nomination as European Commissioner. Here's what Michael McGrath was saying earlier.
25 years ago this month, I ran for election for the very first time as a much more fresh-faced 22-year-old. I have enjoyed the journey since, from town council to county council to Dáil Éireann and to the cabinet table, and it has been an immense privilege. And I'd like to thank the people of Cork South Central for their outstanding support over that period of time. And all going well, I will be continuing in public service, but now in a different role and on a different stage. And I certainly could not have done any of this without the extraordinary love and support of my family, especially my wife, Sarah.
Political correspondent Micheál Lehane joins us now. Micheál, let's talk about the new Minister for Finance. Are people surprised?
Well, I suppose it was between Jack Chambers and Dara Cleary. That's the way the speculation was going. Very clearly, Jack Chambers' promotion last week to deputy leader of Fianna Fáil was a signal that there were further big things on the way for him. He becomes one of the youngest finance ministers. He has been at the cabinet table for the last 4 years, though, in his role as chief whip and then the super junior at transport. So there is pretty a lot of experience there. There also was that brief stint as a junior minister at the Department of Finance before he was elevated to chief whip in the summer of 2020. But he is young. However, there is great faith in him from the party leadership, Micheál Martin saying as much today and again last week, speaking about his skills when it comes to organising Fianna Fáil's local election campaign recently, but in particular also citing that work he did as chief whip in bringing the government together in those early days when it was a new government back in 2020. So for all of those reasons, he's the one who has got the nod.
You talk about his skills. What experience does he bring to the role? Is he seen as having an economic background or experience of serving in an economic portfolio?
Well, I suppose you can see that there was a fairly brief stint in finance as a junior back in the summer of 2020. His qualifications are multiple. They are legal and they are medical, but I suppose they aren't economic. But it isn't the first time at all that there has been someone appointed to finance without economic qualifications. What he does bring is a rigorousness, a thoroughness, and perhaps to a degree of caution when it comes to making decisions. So I think there is a view that Jack Chambers too is well respected across Fianna Fáil, has been very detailed in his approach to different work. There has been most recently his road safety campaign and that work to reduce speed limits across the country. When he was in the role of chief whip, there wasn't just the skills of bringing the government together at that time, which were the chief ones. He also had the role of Gaeltacht Minister for Sport. And of course, during the pandemic, sport and the reintroduction of sport at different times around restrictions was a crucial thing. And he is seen to have handled that well also. But yes, is it a step up? It's a big step up for a young politician, but one that his party leader believes he's well capable of making.
Briefly, what's the knock-on effect of this?
Well, the knock-on effect, I suppose, is that Fianna Fáil has a finance minister that is Dublin-based. There will have to be another promotion now. Someone gets the super junior role at cabinet. I suppose, will people be looking to Dara Cleary there? Could someone like Niamh Smith come into contention as well? For Michael McGrath, it's off to Europe now, isn't it? And the horse trading really beginning to try and secure that post, that prestigious economic post. That's something that the Taoiseach told cabinet this morning. He wants everyone to work together to secure. And of course, that really begins in earnest on Thursday when there is that European summit meeting.
And what portfolio will he be hunting for?
Well, I think anything on the economic side, and the top tier of the economic ones are what the government are after here. And I suppose the fact that Michael McGrath is relinquishing his role at finance immediately means that they are throwing everything behind that campaign.
Micheál Lehane, thank you. The fallout from the case of a woman beaten unconscious by a serving soldier in Limerick continues today. Taoiseach Simon Harris said this morning it raises very grave and serious questions and shone a very serious light in relation to the Defence Forces. Here's what he said.
I think this raises a number of important issues, and I need to talk more broadly than the specific case. Judicial training, sentencing guidelines, the work of the Judicial Council. I think they're all practical actions that need to absolutely be considered in terms of next steps. I think we also have to be very conscious, again, without talking about a specific case, that part of the system does allow a DPP to appeal any sentence that he or she believes to be too lenient or indeed inappropriate in any way. So the legal proceedings and the legal process may not yet have ended in relation to this case. That remains to be seen. But once that window has closed and once the legal proceedings have concluded, I'll absolutely want to meet with Natasha O'Brien, because we need more people to be coming forward. We need to have a zero tolerance approach, and what we certainly don't need is anybody being put off coming forward by a situation where they feel that a crime that carried out wasn't matched in terms of justice. But I do think there's very specific issues here in relation to the Defence Forces, and it's a harsh thing for me to have to say as Taoiseach, but I feel I need to say it. Would the Defence Forces be carrying out the review that they're now carrying out? Was there not so much public interest in this? There are people in the Defence Forces who clearly knew this was happening. Why did they do nothing? These are very serious questions. And as Taoiseach, I'm not satisfied in relation to this. I'm not satisfied at all. I am really angry about it, because we're now seeing a flurry of activity. But that flurry of activity is only coming about because of the bravery of Natasha O'Brien. And I want to know how many other people are hiding with convictions in relation to domestic, sexual or gender-based violence. They have no place, absolutely no place in our Defence Forces.
Taoiseach Simon Harris there. Former Army Ranger and independent TD for Kildare South, Cathal Berry, says politicians are ill-informed about the military. He spoke to us earlier. First, I got his reaction to those comments by the Taoiseach.
I think initially I just think they're a little bit ill-informed, which I don't blame him for. I mean, he's hardly going to be across all the detail across all government departments. The big issue I'd have is that there's a perception out there that the Defence Force regulations are somehow the Army's rules, but they're not. Defence Force regulations are statutory instruments. They're secondary legislation. They're written by politicians and imposed on the Defence Force. So all the Defence Forces are doing is following verbatim the rules created by politicians.
But you're saying the Taoiseach is ill-informed. He was talking about Natasha O'Brien and how she had shown a very serious light in relation to the Defence Forces. And he said it raises very grave and serious questions.
Well, I was just answering your question in relation to his Defence Force comments, just to be very, very clear. So it does raise questions for sure. But the big issue that I would have is the Defence Forces accept their share of the blame in relation to this. What they don't accept, and quite rightly, is that there's other people at fault as well, particularly from the political apparatus point of view. They're the people who designed and drafted and signed off on these regulations, imposed them on the Defence Forces, and the Defence Forces, all they're doing is applying these regulations by the letter of the law. So if the Taoiseach or any politician wants the Defence Forces to breach the law and break the law, they should be very, very explicit and say that.
Well, under Defence Forces Regulation A10, a soldier is automatically dismissed from service if sentenced to prison by civilian courts. However, if soldiers receive a fine or suspended sentence, military authorities have discretion over whether to discharge or not. You say the Defence Forces can't make up their own rules, but they can make up their own decisions.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that regulation. It's paragraph 58 of Defence Force Regulation 810. And if you read further down the paragraph, you can see quite specifically there's a sequence there that the Defence Forces cannot take action against one of their serving personnel until the proceedings in a civilian court have first been completed. And furthermore, that if the perpetrator appeals that civilian court finding, the Defence Forces also cannot take any action whatsoever until the appeal is completed. So the sequencing issue is already underway. The civilian court has issued their findings, and now the Defence Forces can take action. So the problem here is with the regulation, not with the Defence Forces' action.
How could that change?
Very simply. So a Defence Force regulation is a statutory instrument, and it's signed off by the Minister of the day. So Micheál Martin, today, the Taoiseach, could change Defence Force Regulation A10 as he sees fit and modernise it. But a better way and a more, I guess, medium-term solution is Jennifer Carl McNeill is the appointed junior Minister for Defence, the Minister for State at the Department of Defence. She's been appointed for months now, but no delegated powers have been given to her whatsoever. She's a barrister at law, highly competent, very able politician. She would be ideal if the powers were delegated to her. She could review all these Defence Force regulations to make sure they're fit for the modern world. And for instance, in organisations, if there was gross misconduct by an employee can quite rightly be dismissed summarily without notice if gross misconduct happens. And the same thing should apply for the Defence Force.
So just to be clear on this, what are you calling for?
first of all, a review of defence force regulations, which is in the realm of politics. So if we're looking to blame somebody here, if politicians are looking to blame an organisation, they should be looking closer to home rather than trying to throw the defence forces under the bus for following the rules that politicians themselves have drafted for them. And secondly, that Jennifer Carmichael, who is the appointed junior minister of defence, should be given the delegated powers to carry out her function properly. There's 20 ministers for state at the Department of Defence, 20 ministers for state in government at the moment. The only one that has no delegated powers is Minister for State at the Department of Defence. And that tells you how bad the political governance of the defence apparatus has been, in particular over the last 12 years.
We see in the Irish Times that defence forces generals held a high-level meeting to determine the number of serving personnel with convictions for gender-based violence. What does that say about the culture in the defence forces if military authorities don't have this information to hand?
Well, first of all, the defence forces fully accept that gender-based violence, unfortunately, is a societal issue. And if it's in society, it's in the defence forces, it's in our political parties, it's everywhere, it's probably here and even in this building. It's good that the defence force is doing a review, for sure, because we have to respond. But the reality is, it is everywhere in society.
But what does it say about the culture in the defence forces?
The culture in the defence forces is quite similar to the culture in Irish society. Unfortunately, it's a feature of Irish society. This is pervasive and it's very, very prevalent and it still has to be stamped out. And we're not there yet, so more work is required.
Cathal Bury there. In a statement to this programme, the Defence Forces said Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Sean Clancy has ordered a review into a variety of issues, including personnel conduct. After the break, RTE's new 5-year strategy.
Summer lunchtime with the RTE Concert Orchestra and gifted violinist Sarah Brassel, conducted by Killian Farrell. Come and join us for a string sensation in the National Concert Hall, performing the music of Dvorak, Saint-Saëns and Smetana. Summer lunchtime with the RTE Concert Orchestra. NCH Dublin, Tuesday, August 20th. See rte.ie/co for more.
RTE Radio 1.
Shania Twain.
Let's go, girls.
Live in Dublin. Performing one incredible show. Malahide Castle, this Friday, June 28th. Extra tickets available now from Ticketmaster.ie. Subject to license. Don't miss Shania Twain. Live at Malahide Castle this Friday.
Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back to News at 1. RTE publishes a new 5-year strategy today at 3 o'clock. At 3 o'clock, staff will be briefed by Director General Kevin Backhurst. The strategy is called A New Direction. Arts and Media correspondent Evelyn O'Rourke is here to preview the announcement. Evelyn, there are 3 strands in this publication. Do we know what they are?
I know a lot of reports and publications and documents to talk about today, but yeah, 3 strands to it. The first one, that strategy that you mentioned there, we can mention in a minute. But that third one, the implementation one, is important. So you've got the strategy document, you've got the governance framework, and then the implementation roadmap. And this really, that last one, the implementation roadmap, this arises from the 116 recommendations included in the 3 external reports which the Minister for Media, Catherine Martin, had published in May. So this document will outline when and if RTÉ will implement the changes suggested, if they've not done so already. Some have already been rolled out. And the overall aim of all these publications, of course, is to continue to satisfy the requirement from the Minister to release the full interim funding for the organisation. So these documents are really significant.
The strategy then, it's a really big part of this. What can we expect to hear?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have it yet. We're going to get it later on, and the staff will be discussing it with the DG when he rolls it out with his interim leadership team at 3 o'clock. So it'll be interesting. But at this stage, we can expect to see certain things raised in it. And for the staff at RTÉ, I suppose one of the main talking points is going to centre on the reduction in headcount, the net headcount reduction of 20%, which is around 400 people. Now, this strategy, as we say, it's due to cover 5 years. So would that headcount come down through natural attrition over time? There is an understanding there won't be compulsory redundancies, but there's been a lot of speculation speculation about a pending voluntary exit package for staff. So the strategy today is expected to address any package and maybe outline how it might work, including any terms and conditions that may be attached to it.
So this will make RTE smaller in one sense, will it?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, the five-year strategy builds on another strategy. So in November, for example, the DG published the 10-point strategic vision. And what happened then was staff and public had consultations on it. All of that feedback, all the things that have arisen since then, have fed into this kind of final document today. So we do know lots of bits that were there in November that should be built on for today. So yes, number one, there's two things happening. One is RTE demonstrating to the government and to the minister that they're getting their house in order as such. And secondly is staff. What kind of changes are going to happen? And in November, the DG did say hard choices will be made about the challenge of managing RTE's future against an uncertain financial backdrop. So we're going to see how that comes through later on.
What would that mean for the independent sector, for regional broadcasting?
Well, I suppose it was very good news for the independent sector and for regional broadcasting. Back in November, RTE had said that the station will have two production centres, with operations in Cork expanding, reducing Dublin, and a renewed commitment to Limerick and Galway. We'll get more details on that too. The independent bit is interesting because, again, production from RTE, commissions to the independent production companies, there should be talk of an increase of overall investment of 50% above current levels by 2028. Now, you know, if RTE is going to discuss the prospect of this. Obviously, more people work in the independent sector means you need more qualified staff to work in the independent sector. So where do they come from? What happens there? There's a long tradition maybe of people who worked here for years going to the independent sector, but that's going to be interesting now too.
So RTE will look quite different in 5 years, but the cornerstone of this new strategy is funding. Can we expect to hear anything from Kevin Backhurst on that today?
Yeah, I mean, it'll definitely look smaller, and I suppose, as you say, the main thing is funding. Now, the issue is the decision on funding is one for the government and not one that Mr. Backhurst can make, but it is undoubtedly a cornerstone for it. What we are maybe expecting to hear later on today is him calling for even more clarity on the timeline. But as you mentioned, we have a new Minister for Finance in town, so that's going to be interesting. That throws an interesting shade on this too. So it's an ongoing story.
Evelyn O'Rourke, thanks for all of that. Busy day ahead for you. Thank you.
Sport on RTE Radio 1.
Now, here with the news of sport is Michael Corcoran. Michael, a sad day. Micheál Omara-Hertig passing away. What are your memories of him?
It is a sad day. I mean, 93 years of age. I mean, a fantastic age. And a man I had the privilege of working alongside for a long period of time in the sports department. There are one or two things that I was kind of thinking about in the last hour or so in relation to him. And when rugby was the Aviva Stadium stroke Lansdowne Road was being refurbished, and rugby moved to Croke Park for the start of the 2007 Six Nations Championship. And I'd obviously been to Croke Park as a fan and everything like that, but never as a broadcaster. And I remember he arranged for me to go to Croke Park for the football semi-finals and final the year before in 2006. I think it was Dublin Mayo and Kerry against Cork. And he got me a seat in the row behind where he was sitting, so I could kind of visualise what my job was going to be the following year for the Six Nations Championship. And I was just completely fascinated at how he operated, because he had two members of his family, one on either side, and they were helping each other, and there was arms flying all over the place, pointing at, you know, various little snippets of information and the whole thing. And he kept, I mean, the ball was, as Jarlath Byrne said earlier there, the ball was always up and down the pitch at 100 miles an hour. So too was his commentary, to be fair about it. And so too were the people helping him, that I was absolutely exhausted coming out of there thinking, you know, do I have to try and emulate something like that, to be fair about it? But he was a brilliant man. He was a brilliant man. God rest him. That was one of early memory of him, that first game Ireland losing to France. But he was very, very helpful with advice to younger people, to be fair about it. And the tributes that have been paid already in this programme have been iconic, to be fair. May he rest in peace. Just a couple of things in terms of the other sports news of the day, and it seems kind of insignificant, to be perfectly honest about it. Some really big games in terms of the Euros 2024. The Austrian boss, Ralf Rangnick, has urged his side to get the result they need against the Netherlands to avoid the complicated scenario of finishing third. Austria will guarantee one of the top spots in Group D if they beat the Dutch. That game is at 5. France in action against already eliminated Poland. Later on tonight, the spotlight is on England. They will top their group with a win against Slovenia. Denmark and Serbia are the other two games. So a lot of play in the Euros on a day like this.
Michael Corcoran, thanks a million. And that's the news this lunchtime. Mark McGrath was on sound today. Broadcast coordinator was Anne-Marie Donlan. The editor of the News at One is Connor Barnes. Stay tuned for Liveline up shortly with Katie Hannan. But before we go, we'll leave you with the voice of Micheál Omar Hertig, a broadcasting legend. May he rest in peace.
50 yards out from the Dublin goal. On the right-hand side of the field, Maurice Fitzgerald kicking it, dropping it in toward the goal, dropping it in, and magnificent point by Maurice Fitzgerald. On the 50-yard line, on the right-hand side of the field, and Maurice the Immortal has sent it over the bar. We're within 10 seconds of injury time. Down the field, a bad kick, it's all over, and Cork are All-Ireland champions for 1990. They have done the magnificent double. They have won the All-Ireland at senior hurling. They've won the All-Ireland at senior football with 14 men. And Teddy McCarthy is a man of heart. Johnny Dooley would be wise to tap it over the bar and hope for something to develop later on. Johnny Dooley looks as if he'll go for the point. All right, no, he blasted it. No, and he's got the goal!
This summer at Boots, we're with you for hay fever relief to take on that hype, as well as foot care to take care of yourself afterwards. With buy one, get the second half price on health solutions, we're with you for saving summer. Boots, with you for life. Selected stores, products and boots.ie. Excludes medicines. Cheapest product half price. Offer ends 10th September.
Edith Piaf, the iconic French chanteuse. Friday, July 12th at the National Concert Hall, the National Symphony Orchestra and the acclaimed Piaf singer and interpreter Camille O'Sullivan pay tribute to her and to her Belgian soulmate, Jacques Brel. With signature songs including Milor, Non, Je ne regrette rien, La vie en rose and Ne me quitte pas, cnch.ie.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Step into summer with our new curtain designs and colours. Explore our latest designs in-store or online.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan here with you until 3 o'clock on this day, this very sad day, where we are hearing the news that we have lost Micheál Omar Hertig, a Kerry man extraordinaire, an Irish man extraordinaire. I see the statement in from the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, there saying the word legend gets used too often, but for Micheál, it is almost not enough. And those are very, very true words. I played this clip earlier when I was talking to Shea Byrne, and I think we should play it in because it was in his own words, his feelings about leaving the stage, his first leaving of the stage when he retired from commentating back in 2010. And this is Micheál Omar Hertig speaking on the Late Late Show on that occasion.
I've been enjoying every single game I ever did since 1949. Now, I began to say to myself, supposing the day came that I'd no longer enjoy it, that I'd look upon it as going out to do a day's work. Mm. And I said I'd hate to experience that. I think that's what swayed me more than anything, to decide that I've been doing it long enough, and while it's still most enjoyable, to leave the scene.
Micheál Omar Hertig, in his own words there. We should say as well, of course, the country is coming to terms with losing a national treasure, voice that was the voice of the GAA, but the voice of Ireland for many of the diaspora for decades. But of course, his family and his close friends have lost somebody very, very special. And our thoughts, of course, are with all of them today. I want to go to somebody who would have known, who knew Micheál very, very well. Bomber Liston, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
And I know I broke the news to you a little earlier there, Bomber. It's shocking. I mean, he was a great age. We say that, but it's always too soon when you're losing somebody of Micheál Omar Hertig's stature.
Yes, look, he was a great friend and a great friend to a lot of people. But he's left great memories behind to a lot of people. He'll be fondly remembered. And I'd just like to take this opportunity of sending my sympathies to Helena and all the family. He was really, truly loved, especially by all.